SMQBs, this is episode 172. Two being the operative word. There are two SMQBs here. It's just me, Bison, and House tonight. So that's it. We're missing Rooster, Milk, and Pope. Don't know where any of them are. I don't know. They're just probably out gallivanting around.
Celebrating their independence.
Yeah, that's right. House, let's get to it. Who are you bringing to a bar this week?
I take it you wouldn't recognize Yaroslava Mahuchik if I brought her to the bar?
I'm going to go with probably not. Nope.
This was cool. She is a 22-year-old high jumper from Ukraine, because I know you love your track and field stuff.
Yes.
And she just broke a 37-year-old world record this past weekend in Paris on her first attempt at what is, in our system, 6'10" 3/4", but I guess it's something like 2.10 meters. But when you see the jump, it's really high. Like, to jump almost 7 feet is really, really impressive. So that was cool.
That's a good one. A 37-year-old record?
37-year-old record broken by a 22-year-old, stunningly beautiful, tall, fun Ukrainian woman. I think Rooster would want to have Dan Hurley join us at the bar and pay for the drinks with his $50 million extension.
Did he just get an extension?
Yeah. We have to now suffer through that guy through 2029
and 30. Yeah, he's the worst.
I think Pope
is the worst.
My guess is that Pope would bring Keegan Bradley to the bar because he's just been named the next U.S. Ryder Cup captain.
Captain, okay.
How to get the trophy back. And Milk, I don't know. Whoever's serving White Claw, I don't know who Milk would have.
Yeah, I don't know who Milk's bringing to the bar. Well, I'm bringing I just want to mention that was a good thing on your track and field star, because we will be having our Summer Olympics extravaganza coming up soon. Got opening ceremonies are July 26th, so we got a little bit of time, but be on the lookout, listeners, for our you don't want to miss our in-depth canoeing, badminton, you name it. We cover all the Grand Olympic sports.
Can't wait.
Back to who I'm bringing to the bar, and I'm going to preview another show for you too here. I am bringing one CJ Abrams, the shortstop for the Washington Nationals, who was just named to his first All-Star game. And with him, I'm going to bring along James Wood, who is the number one prospect in all of baseball. The Nats called him up just a week ago tonight, and he has had a pretty good, I think at one point after yesterday, I think he was 7 for 23. With 4 walks, a home run, a double, 5 runs scored, a bunch of RBIs. So he had a very impressive first week, but it was good to see that, you know, there was a lot of hype around him. They left him down in the minors in AAA for a while, but he wasn't being challenged there. So he's up. Looks like he'll probably be up for the rest of it. I mean, certainly he's going to have some downtimes. I mean, this isn't going to be usual, but
what was that crazy story? I missed the other half of the story, but I think James Wood.
Yeah.
James Wood hit his first home run off of Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
And somebody else on the Nationals, like also in that same park, hit their home run. What was
I don't know. I didn't hear that.
Some wild bookend of both having home runs off of Lance Lynn as their first home runs in that same park.
Oh, so interesting.
Lance Lynn has been around the game for a long time, but that was his first homer, right?
It was his first homer. Yep. Yeah. And I was at spring training for the first spring training game this year, and saw Wood's first at bat, and it only lasted one pitch, and he hit it about 480 feet in spring training. So it was exciting. I mean, he has all the markings to be a superstar.
Both of these guys part of the Soto trade?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now,
Mackenzie Gore, he's got to learn to be a little more efficient, but his ERA, and he's pitching pretty well this year.
Now the other part that you kind of turned, I think, our listeners on and a lot of us on the pod on to last year, the year before, is the, speaking of these guys, is the futures game part of the All-Star game, which is really, really fun because these guys are really the next thing. And these are the top of the sport in the minors. Does this mean that he's called up that he cannot play in the futures game, or how does that work? Do you know?
Boy, I don't know. That's a good question. He's still listed for some reason as a prospect. I don't know how that all works. I don't know if there's like a certain amount of games, but he's not in the minors right now. So I don't know if he could play in the futures game.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that part of the All-Star weekend.
That's fun. It's fun. So we'll have an All-Star game show next week. We've got the teams have been released, but the game's not till next Tuesday. So we'll talk about that. We'll cover that on Monday. Listen, we're going to have a nice, tidy show for you tonight here. So let's jump right into it a little bit. House, tell us a little bit about what you heard from the Uruguayan soccer coach and how it sort of paints a picture of sports here in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of caught my attention. There's this outspoken, kind of larger-than-life coach named Marcelo Bielsa, who's the Uruguayan coach. He used to coach.
I thought you were going to say he was the father of the Ukrainian jumper.
I don't think they're related.
We are truly international here on the SMQBs.
Uruguay is making an impressive run. They just beat Brazil in the shootout in Copa America and will face Colombia in the semifinal. Argentina, Canada is in the other semifinal, which begin over the next couple of days. And Uruguay's coach, Marcelo Bielsa, used to be the coach of Leeds. He took them from basically being a nothing and also ran in Premier League to then playing up in the main competition. And he's known for having these long, rambling, but entertaining press conferences. And this has caught a lot of attention in the sports world, certainly in the soccer world, because what he said in this press conference was that the game of soccer, if it continues in the way that it's going, is going to die. And the reason it's going to die is because of creeping commercialization, where money is king, players are overplayed just so we can see the very best on television. They don't get a rest. You have to play them for as much of the game as possible. As he said, sure, there's more spectators, but the game is less attractive. And over time, when the game becomes less attractive, you know, now there will be less spectators. It will just cannibalize itself. And he was lamenting how, you know, the sport is just, you know, for many, just 5 minutes of highlights. Let me see the 5 minutes of highlights. And as I was listening to his comments, I thought, like, pretty sure you could say that for most all of the major sports as to what has been happening to them. Ratings for most of the sports are down. There was a time that they were up in spectators. They tried to gin up more spectators with rules changes. We've talked a lot on this pod about, you know, ghost runners in the 10th inning and pitch clocks. And now, you know, there's rule changes in the NFL. There's rule changes, you know, hockey years ago switched their overtime rules to, you know, 4-on-4 hockey followed by shootout. What could be more attractive to viewers than, you know, a shootout? I don't know. I thought it'd be great for us to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, isn't this all attention span stuff, right? I mean, you know, we saw this with baseball with the pitch clock. I find personally offensive that there's a pitch clock, but it has worked. I mean, the July 4th Nats game started at 11:05 and was over at 1:06. I mean, that's bananas. A 2-hour game. It was also a great, it was a 1-0 game. But, you know, the there was the idea that baseball was, you know, too slow, and now you got the home runs and that's all anybody really wants to see. And so they've sped the game up. There's less strategy. You know, you're not bunting a guy over as much. There's a lot more to be said for guys, you know, striking out, but also hitting home runs. Your guy Schwarber's made a living off of it the last 5 years or so. You go back to the NFL. I mean, the NFL has changed rules as far as what D-backs can do on wide receivers, right? With the idea of creating more offense. Hockey's changed some of the rules around how, you know, remember you couldn't have a two-line pass?
Oh, that's right.
I think you can do that now.
You can do that now, sure.
It springs breakaways. We've been seeing this in a lot of games, a lot of sports where they're trying to make it more highlight focused, more exciting, more action packed. Is soccer just the latest to recognize that?
I think at least this coach, you know, one of the problems in soccer is there are so many competitions. You know, you talk about each of these major leagues in soccer has their own country cup. They have their own country cup across all the leagues. They have the Champions League. If you're the best of, if you're not a champion, you can still be in the Euros. And then you've got your regular league. So there's almost no rest. And now that there's TV deals, billions of dollars, it's now on NBC, even though it's, you know, the Premier League, even though it's a game played over the pond, NBC has, you know, what is relatively prime time weekend games to watch. So if NBC is putting that on, you can't turn that on to watch bench players be your starters. You want to watch the best players. And that means that these teams that are now owned by large conglomerates, I mean, all of major soccer around the world is owned by the largest, you know, businesses and huge, huge conglomerates. And so how do they make money and how do they get the next TV deal? You got to have your stars playing all the time. You got to have your stars trying bicycle kicks. You got to have your stars, you know, doing what is highlight reel stuff. And so, yeah, I do think soccer, which is starting to quickly get attention in the U.S. more so than in many years, is going to go that way. You know, you make a great point about how the rules change in some of these other sports. I mean, you and I were raised in NFC East, smash mouth, a yard and a cloud of dust football.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, all the talk is, how come running backs can't even get paid into their next contract?
Right.
Why? Because D-backs can't touch wide receivers because it's a passing game, because people want to see, you know, Tyreek Hill and, you know, Ja'Marr Chase and A.J. Brown and, you know, you name it.
Jaden Daniels hitting Terry McLaurin for
exactly
down bombs. I have a question about soccer that I want to ask you, and it ties into this a little bit. As a less than casual watcher of soccer, I noticed that it seems to me that these international competitions that I have watched seem more wide open and exciting than the Premier League games that I've watched. It just seems like the tempo is more frenetic at times. Am I right, or am I just seeing different times of these games?
It depends. Like the Spain-Germany quarterfinal the other day was frenetic. That's a little bit of the style of play. You know, Swiss game was much more tight. You know, they play a much more defensive game. There's something interesting if folks are just coming to watch soccer and they're listening to these podcasts and you're comparing the Copa America versus the Euros. One of the reasons that you're seeing a little bit more wide open play is because technically in soccer, while there are suggested parameters of the pitch, of the field. It's not regulation. It's not like if it's not measured the way it is in baseball, you can't throw the pitch. If it's in football, you can't, like, you have to measure the basket in basketball. The in Copa America, the U.S. games in particular are being, well, the, all of these games, they're being played for the most part on U.S. football stadiums. And the way the dimensions are of the stadium, you cannot get the same width. So you're seeing, you're seeing tighter games. You're seeing more physical games. You're in Copa America. You've been seeing almost what sometimes feels like a brawl. And yeah, in the Euros, you've been seeing a little bit more wide open play. Some of that's just the sheer size of the pitch and the dimensions of the field.
Interesting.
Some, yeah. But look, I mean,
let's go back to the money thing for a minute. Yeah, there was something else that I wanted to mention. And it we didn't get here yet to how it trickles down to the college ranks. You know, I remember a guy named Patrick Ewing who came to Georgetown as a high school, you know, kid, 18 years old, came here and to the D.C. area. And you still talk to people who are here and they feel like Patrick is like a son of the Washington, D.C. area, right? Because he was here for 4 years. Played in a bunch of national championships. I mean, obviously, he was one of the most dominant college players of all time. But he grew up before the Georgetown fans, right? He grew up from being a 18-year-old kid out of high school to being a 22, 23-year-old guy going to the NBA. And you don't have that now because of the money, because of the portal, because of the nil contracts. I mean, is money gonna, you know, how has money changed college? I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, but it's, I don't know. I think it's taken that away. You don't have teams. You don't have kids that you root for. You're just, it's like Seinfeld, right? Pope say it's laundry. You're rooting for laundry at this point, right?
That's right. It's funny you say that because that's part of what Bielsa's press conference was about, was talking about the part of soccer that made it a beautiful sport was its relationship to the community. When he used to coach Leeds, he used to make the players on the team go around the town and for at the pregame for practice, they would pick up litter. And the reason why he wanted his players to pick up litter is because he wanted his players to understand what it meant for the fans to see a game. Like, it's kind of a more blue collar town. These folks don't make a lot of money. You know, some of them are just picking up trash, yet they show up to that stadium because that's every last hard earned dollar or euro or pound or whatever it was that they're spending. I think now it's just taken for granted. There will always be a fan that will fill up a stadium. There will always be a company that will fill up the club boxes.
Yeah.
And we've lost a lot of that connection to community. It's funny, in Philly here, when you talk about the Rushmore of our players in our town, it's not just their accomplishments on the field or court. It's the connection they had with the city. You know, already one of things that has endeared Bryce Harper so much to the city is because he gets it. He roots for the other teams in town. He comments on them. He wears the clothes of the other teams. He understands that he is part of a larger community. He famously wore a shirt before during the playoffs last year, the year before, and the number across the shirt was whatever the max attendance was in Citizens Bank Park. It was like 45,365. And that was like, he plays for the team that is every single fan in the stadium. Brian Dawkins, Allen Iverson, these are the guys that, you know, understood the city. Money is definitely money and free agency, especially in college, but in pro sports too. It's changing fandom.
And House, let's even go up a level. Let's go to the ownership, because, you know, it used to be that the owners of these teams had businesses that they were running. They had things that they were doing, and then they owned a team sort of on the side, right? I mean, it was like,
yeah, it was the guy that owned the car dealerships.
That's right. I mean, they had interest, and this was like just kind of a play thing for them. Now, these ownership groups, I mean, the business is sports. Like Josh Harris, the, who owns the Commanders. I mean, he's got the Commanders, the Sixers, and the Devils, right? I mean, he owns all three. He is a sports business person. The it's the Fenway Group, right? That owns the Red Sox. That owns is it Liverpool? And
yes,
I think they were just they just bought maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins also. So I mean, you have these entities now that don't have any loyalty to a city, but they are literally their business is sports ownership. Period. That's it, and that's different. I mean, you know, you think about some of the people like Abe Pollin, who owned the Wizards and the Caps or the Bullets back then. Pollin was a developer, and he didn't, you know, he wanted to keep developing while he also had his teams. So it's just it's a totally different environment now where it's business from start to finish, and it's starting in college to be more of a business.
It's not changing anytime fast. These deals, you know, the survival of sports leagues now are premised upon what is your television sports deal? What is the next deal that you can get from whomever? Whether it's, you know, now it's can you how much money can you squeeze out of Amazon Prime? How much money can you squeeze out of all of this? Is the rights to televise these games, and who's going to have to pay for that? We are. So, right. I really hope that the schism between sports and fan isn't lost the more and more money. Maybe we sound like old heads. Maybe this is all just about like old guys looking for what was the heyday when we were connected to the community, but I'm not so sure. I think Bielsa might be onto something. I think soccer is just one of the latest, like you said, in the long line of what's happened to sports. I hope the more that, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about what Major League Baseball did with the Negro League game down in Alabama. or what they do when, you know, they do the Field of Dreams game. Leagues need to do more things like that that demonstrate that this game belongs to the fans and what the fans want to see. Of course, you can make the argument that's just made for television too, but
well, anyway. And so, you know, talking about television, I mean, that raises, oh, by the way, one other point before we get to what I want to say about television, you know, we already saw with fantasy football, how fantasy football dragged people away from rooting for their teams and to the red zone and to watching players all the time. And now with gambling being so prevalent, you got to figure that's going to only get more extreme where people are logging in to watch different players because of their personal interest in the outcome, whether it's fantasy or money on the game or on the player. So that's going to change it too. And one of the ways you can log in and watch all these games is through the Sunday Ticket, which brings up another news piece that I know you wanted to talk a little bit about. Tell us what's going on with Sunday Ticket and how it sort of plays into all this, you know, money grab.
Well, I'm hoping that this verdict that just came down on June 27th holds, and you and I get a check for $4,000 or $5,000, but
yeah, that would be nice.
But I doubt it. A lot of people actually still don't know about this. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten even more attention. But there was a lawsuit that was started years ago by a bar, and it was tossed out. It went up on appeal, made its way back. Well, after a very long trial that was held in Los Angeles, a jury recently awarded $4.7 billion in damages to $2.4 million residential customers and 48,000 restaurants and bars for a total of $4.7 billion. This was the kind of case called an antitrust case, which is those kinds of cases that are meant to challenge anti-competitive behavior. And in antitrust cases, wherever there's an award of damages, the laws provide that those damages can be tripled. So technically, if this verdict were to be upheld and survive appellate, you know, appeals and things like that, the real exposure to the NFL could be $14 billion. So what's behind this case? And from 2011 to 2023, that those all those 2.4 million residents and 48,000 restaurants and bars subscribe to the NFL Sunday Ticket, which is probably familiar to a lot of our listeners. And the deal was that, as people know, for your own team, your local team, about 90% of those games are free to watch. If you don't buy anything else and you just own Fox television and the Commanders are on TV, you can flip on Fox and you can watch it for free. But if you wanted to watch, if you moved from DC to, I don't know, Miami, and now you want to watch the Washington Commanders, your options start to change a little bit. And what the NFL did is they introduced this deal then with DirecTV, the Sunday Ticket. And the price was before any kind of discounts, which sometimes there are discounts offered in order to get people to sign up. But overall, the basically the list price was around $349 per year. And the argument was that the NFL and its owners conspired to not compete in the sale of out-of-town broadcasts, and in that way inflated the price. For example, you could say, hey, I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, and I know that there's a pocket of people living in Miami that might want to watch my game. I'll make my games available for $50, and I'll create some kind of $50 ticket on a cable. And basically, all the owners, the argument was, and the NFL got together and said, well, let's not do that. Let's not fight with one another. Let's just make a deal with DirecTV and have a package that costs about $350, and we'll make a fortune. The problem was that the actual price, what it might cost a team to do something like that, like the Eagles, would be about $100. And the list price was about $300. So that's how you got to this damages of $200 times all those subscribers. The NFL admitted during this trial that they deliberately tried to inflate the cost, actually, to make it that high, to limit the number of subscribers, because if they made it too low, then what would happen is CBS and Fox wouldn't have anybody watching anymore, because everybody would just pay a reasonable amount of price. So they did make it really expensive, but they made it just affordable enough that they knew that millions and millions of people would subscribe. And, you know, that's what, when we really want to see how the sausage is made, that's really when we talk about money's influence in sports. You and I and the rest of our listeners could be watching NFL much cheaper and certainly closer to free than $300 if it weren't for the NFL and its 32 owners conspiring. And that, until you got your hand caught in the cookie jar, that's why teams want to own these businesses. It all comes full circle to the money.
Yeah. That's right. And you know, it's interesting too, because now, you know, there's all sorts of different packages. Like there's the MLB package. There's the, what's the NBA one called?
Season ticket or so. Yeah. Season pass. Season, yeah. Pass, right.
Or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, because if you have it, you can watch games, you know. Listen, there was a lot of times where it was more interesting for me to turn on a Golden State Warriors game than a Washington Wizards game the past couple of years. And so having the league pass was fun. But then when you realize, you know, how you get there and how you're paying for it, it's all a big conspiracy. We've also seen some of these in baseball, and I guess in other sports too. The media rights, the local TV rights, are such a big deal. You know, everybody's got their own channel. Like, so, you know, here we have Masson, right? The Mid-Atlantic Sports Network that covers the Orioles and the Nationals. That's a different argument for a different story for a different day about that relationship. But then they also would have the Caps and the Wizards for a period of time. Now there's NBC Sports DC that Ted Leontis owns, that carries the Caps and the Wizards and the Mystics. Do you guys have that in Philly? Do you have, what's your like regional sports?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was Comcast Sports. Then it changed to, I think it's now just part of the NBC Sports Philadelphia. It's NBC Sports. Yeah. It's a Comcast owned business. But yeah, they own the rights to some of the local home at home and away games. But it's, you know, you mentioned that again, follow the money. If Pope were on here, I think he would talk about how I think the Texas Rangers fans were getting screwed out of that because of some kind of, you know, again, fight between the cable company and whether or not the price was right in order for them to have a deal to show those games. And who gets lost in the shuffle of all of this is the fans. And it's all goes back to supply and demand. I mean, the fans are going to demand to watch the sport. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the price is going to be. There's always going to be the demand to watch it. And there's a finite, as much sports is on TV, you and I both know there are many nights where we're texting the group chat saying, well, what sports are on TV tonight for us to watch? Is there something to watch? There's always a demand, and there's actually more of a limited supply than you think. So if you start raising the price on things, the people are still going to come because the demand is always there.
Yeah.
It's not like we can boycott. It's not like we can boycott and stop showing up to watch the Commanders and the Nationals and the Eagles, the Sixers, because there's going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of other fans who will show up to do it. Hundreds of thousands. Who will show up.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Well, it's interesting stuff. It's it definitely affects the way we consume the sport. You know, they're one of those regional networks, I guess, that had a bunch of the MLB teams was in bankruptcy this year. And it's now the Major League Baseball is now looking at, and a lot of these leagues are looking at, should we be doing kind of what the NFL does and bring it all in and have one, you know, should MLB own all the rights to all the games and have their own streaming service that's out there? So there's going to be some changes in it as these leagues try and milk every, you know, get every dollar they can out of the season, out of the games.
Well, that's the thing. The technology is available to them to show all this stuff with ease. I mean, when you think about what you can turn on YouTube television and watch, you know, news across the country, there's so much that you could watch. It's all very easy for them to do it. They are all just in at some level conspiring to raise the price so that, you know, the NBA season pass or whatever else, we've got to make the price just high enough so that we can make some money off it.
Yeah. Well, interesting stuff. I'd be curious to hear what the other guys think about it. I mean, we do live in a capitalist society, so, but you know, this is where, you know, we touched on this a little bit earlier in the year where Leontis wanted to move the Wizards and the Caps out of D.C. Into Virginia to get a big fancy arena deal and entertainment zone, basically. And I made the point that, you know, these guys who own these teams, in some ways, they're stewards of the community, right? The teams belong to the communities. Maybe that's just a hokey viewpoint that doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, they are business people and they are spending their money, but it sure seems like they owe something to the community that buys the tickets and buys the $12 beers and everything. So, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. So,
you know,
Leontis is on his apology tour, trying to make good with all the fans in DC now. So we'll see what happens with the rest of them. I'm just trying to think, is there anything bad we can say about Tampa, Dallas, and New York teams right now? I feel like we ought to have a moment of crapping on them.
Well, I think we can talk about Malik Nabers partying at the bar last night. I hope for Rooster's sake that they don't have another crazy party animal on their hands. So we'll crap on them.
The Rays have really shit the bed, right? I mean, they're
really good. They're a really, really good baseball team.
Yeah.
The Rays. Oh yeah. They are, they're very good at looking up from the bottom of that division. So they're good at that. And the Rangers, how about the Rangers' embarrassment that they are hosting the All-Star game at Globe Life Field as the defending World Series champs, and they don't have a single player playing in the All-Star game, or maybe they got some kind of extra added, but
that's embarrassing. I mean, talk horrible. About, right? I mean, talk about really going from hero to zero. Win the World Series, get the chance to host the All-Star game, and just blow it.
If you want to borrow one of my seven players that are playing the All-Star game, Pope, you can do that. We've got seven of them in Philly.
Seven. That's pretty good. Yeah. All right. Don't call it a comeback. Well, hey, do you have a punchable face this week?
I don't. You better have one. Do you have a punch? We punch somebody every week.
I know. And I don't think I do have one this week.
I mean, Max behaved enough.
Yeah. No, I'm going to punch. I am going to punch those two.
Let's go.
You know what I've noticed? I'm going to punch Max and Lando. Max Verstappen Norris.
Okay.
These guys are like the mean girls when they go into the little victory area.
I mean, the green room.
So for the people who don't watch a lot of F1, after the race is over, the top three guys, they go kind of into this little like debrief room, and they go in there and they're all like, you know, they're taking their helmets off and they're sipping some water. And they're sitting in these director chairs and they're just watching clips of the race. And like Max and Lando are in there and they're chumming away and they're laughing about things and they're talking about moves everyone made. And then when the third guy comes in, like, you know, it was George Russell one week, it was Carlos Sainz, it was Lewis this week, which we'll probably talk more about in a second, but they just like, they don't include them. It's really weird. It's like the clickiest thing.
It's right? So true. It's they're all like, you know, chumming around and laughing and stuff like that. And then it gets all quiet when the uncool kid comes into the room.
Yes. Like these guys are like, you know, fuck off already. All right. I mean, it's just so obnoxious. So apparent too. Yeah. I'll punch those fuckers.
Barbecue sauce.
All right. How about a lasso? Do you have a lasso?
I have two lassos this week because we've been so barren on having lassos for weeks on end. There are two really good stories. Did you know that we are going to have a woman coach on the bench in professional men's National Hockey League hockey next year?
I did not know that.
Yeah, this is a really good story. Jessica Campbell is a former forward with the Canadian women's national team and a silver medalist in the 2015 Women's World Championship. And she had been a assistant coach for a while, including assistant coach for the Coachella Valley Firebirds in 2022. And she has just recently been named as an assistant coach to the Seattle Kraken. And she will be on the bench and will be the very first woman to be be behind the bench in NHL history. She had worked with the Kraken's head coach, Dan Bielsma, when she was with the Coachella Firebirds. And I just think that's an awesome, we've seen these developments happening on the sidelines in the NFL, a little bit in baseball as well, a little bit in basketball as well. Hockey, I don't know why it feels more surprising to see it, but I just think it's great for the sport to take down those barriers. And it's another reason to vote for the Kraken.
The Kraken. Yeah. All right. That's a good one. What's your second one?
The second one is a back-to-back lasso for Jason Kelce. Talk about a man of the people. We did this last year, but every summer he goes down to Seattle City, which is one of the Jersey Shore towns, and he just has a good old time partying, drinking, doing shots with folks, drinking beers with folks, getting up close and personal, taking selfies, and all of it, despite all the craziness and the drinking and all that fun stuff, is all of it is for the good cause of autism research and care. And this is kind of staggering to me. And he brings, you know, all kinds of, you know, his buddies from the his former buddies from the team. You know, he has Brandon Graham and Landon Dickerson and Dallas Goedert and Fletcher Cox there. He raised $865,000 for autism research and care.
Wow.
And I just think that's a very cool thing that he continues to do that. And talk about a man of the people and somebody connecting with the fans. That's another lasso for this week.
All right. Good one. And by the way, speaking of the Kelseys, you know, for all the devotees of their podcast, they're going to be taking a little hiatus. Did you hear this?
I did not hear that.
They're shutting the pod down for a little while. Not going to be doing it. So if you are a fan of the New Heights podcast and need to get your sports picks,
come on over.
The SMQBs will happily have you.
We're going to be having very similar guests. Very similar guests.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Definitely. All right. So that's our lassos. I like them. Those are good ones. I still, I think I bet you on a game one year and had to make a contribution to the Eagles Autism Foundation. And I still get emails this month or so.
It's a good cause.
Despite having unsubscribed many, many times. So, all right. How about a buzzer beater? What do you got?
Just real quick, folks, tune in for the next several days on what is the semifinals and then the finals of Copa America and the Euros. It has pretty closely, despite the disappointment of USA, it's pretty closely held to form of the best of the best. So we've got England versus the Netherlands, and you've got France versus Spain. You're sure to have a world superpower in the Euros finals. Those semifinals are the next 2 days, tomorrow and Wednesday, Tuesday and Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And then at night on those 2 days, tomorrow night, Argentina, Canada. Yours truly will be going to see Messi again at MetLife. Yeah, I'm going to go see Messi in the semis against Canada, MetLife, taking my son. And we're going to see that semifinal. And then the next night, there will be Colombia versus Uruguay. And so if form holds, you're going to see two of the very best in South America. Both Colombia and Uruguay are very good. Likely play the...
I saw Colombia.
They're very good.
Drop the hammer on the U.S. This year.
Yeah. And then Colombia just dropped the hammer on Panama in the quarter. So they're a very, very good team. They could really... I think it's going to be end up being Colombia versus Argentina, which would be a great final. And boy, I mean, could you imagine a France-England final on Sunday? I think that's what the world is hoping for. But both of those finals will also be played this Sunday, July 14th. So keep your eye on the best possible soccer you could watch outside of the World Cup.
England, I mean, God, if they get in the finals, they lose again. I think the island might sink, right? I mean,
the crazy thing is neither France nor England have barely scored a goal in regulation. I mean, it's all come in penalty kicks or off of, you know, or off of some kind of there's been very, very, very little scoring. I do think it's going to open up for the semifinals. And I think Spain's the one to beat. But somehow, if France could pull it off and we get France-England, that would be awesome.
All right. Well, I'll give you my buzzer beater. It's the guy behind me on my background here. Pretty awesome. British Grand Prix at Silverstone yesterday. You know, F1 has been in this... At least it seemed like it was in a rut where Max Verstappen and Red Bull were winning every weekend. Last year, it was like if Max didn't win, Sergio won. It was pretty much 1-2 those guys every which way. And you just didn't see a way. You didn't see it changing until the new regs in 26. Just seemed like they had mastered this car and couldn't be stopped. This year sort of started off a little bit of the same. But what? Here we are.
Wow.
With now we've had six different winners out of 13 Grand Prix this year. I think I got that right. And none more, I don't know, breathtaking, I guess, than yesterday's, where Lewis Hamilton, Sir Lewis Hamilton, one of the probably proudest sons of the United Kingdom, was able to, after, I heard it was like something like 950 days or something. I mean, this guy's a seven-time world champion. And it had been since 2022 or 2021
Saudi Arabia
that he won a race. And he took the podium yesterday and really just drove a perfect race. He needed it too. And thankfully the race wasn't three more laps, because it might have been a little different outcome.
Race at home.
Yeah. At home. And man, he was emotional after it. I think that, you know, it shakes your confidence a little bit when you win and win and win all your career, and then all of a sudden you don't. It was pretty cool. It was really cool to see him atop a podium, and it really meant something to him too.
I think it's expected probably be the last victory that he'll have for Mercedes.
That's
right. He's had a storied career with them, and there were questions that he was kind of inferring during the year as to whether or not they were favoring George Russell and whether Mercedes was giving him the best treatment. But you could see in that victory the outpouring of emotion, not just from Lewis, but from their race director, Toto Wolff. They were both very, very emotional. I think they knew how much this meant to Lewis's career, to Mercedes, everything. It was pretty cool.
It was a pretty cool moment, definitely. Well, we can't end it. We wish we could end right there, but we got to pour one out for a young man, Kyrie Jackson. I guess a fourth round pick out of Oregon. From the was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, sadly killed in a car wreck here in the DC area where he played high school football, and two of his teammates from that team, they were all killed in a car wreck. It was, you know, it's who knows what really happened. It was 3:45 in the morning. It was a 2 or 3 car accident, and everybody in their car was killed. You know, I've heard that it wasn't their fault. I've heard, you know, some stories that it was another driver who caused the wreck. But man, it's
horrible
just
to see these.
Yeah.
These kids, but especially this kid with such promise.
Yeah. I mean, they're kids. And, you know, those stories hit close to home in this area where, you know, Len Bias, you know, never got his chance to play in the NBA. And so whenever you have a young athlete who dies in a situation like this, it always brings back those echoes of the Len Bias story, which, you know, which really changed the DC basketball world in a big way back when it happened. And boy, it really probably changed the Celtics franchise too. So anyway, we want to pour one out for Kyrie and his two buddies who were in the car with him. You got anything else?
All right. Happier days ahead next week. All-Star Game Extravaganza next week.
All right. Hopefully we'll have a full complement of SMTVs. We will see you next week. The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first place team that he didn't have a personal connection to.
Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.